Don't slide into my DMs, bruh.
Hey now, boys and girls, welcome in to show 44 of the Pucknologist on TealTownUSA.com. Oh, it's been a hell of a couple weeks. Sorry we missed you last week, but some people had to go on the IR. You know how it is. I am your host, AJ Strong, and with me, we got to get a couple fill-ins off the bench, a couple call-ups, if you will. Hockey Punk joining today, Puck Guy.
Yes, I am that custard filling that you just love to have every now and then. Oh, you meant fill in, not filling. Gotcha. Hi, everyone.
Oh, my God. That could be the intro right there. Filling in on the other side, we got a call up from San Diego. No, not the Gulls, but Chris JWS.
Hey, I honestly have no idea how I can follow Puck Guy. That was something.
He's the custard. You can be the jam.
Indeed.
Oh, so since we last left you, Shark fans, the San Jose Sharks have put themselves together a record of 36-23-9, good for a whopping 81 points. Right now, the Sharks have somehow been able to keep that second spot in the Pacific Division as the Ducks now have jumped back into the third slot with 80 points. LA falls to fourth with 79, and Calgary stays at fifth with 78. That's right, kids, only 3 points are separating second and fifth. The last few weeks of Sharks hockey is going to be tight. During that stretch, though, the Sharks played themselves 4 games, picking up 2 wins and 2 losses. We start in Chicago, or I should say we start versus Chicago. The Sharks were able to score a touchdown in this one, winning 7-2, which clearly made up for their previous effort versus the Blackhawks the week prior. So, let's just get into it. Puck Guy, tell me what in the world? I mean, was there a Shark who wasn't on the score sheet versus Chicago?
Exactly. I mean, they had, I think, about 17 different scores on the scoring sheet that night. A crazy second period where the Blackhawks just fell apart. I mean, I don't know what happened to them. Well, I mean, yes, they got older. They aren't producing as much. And it doesn't help that Corey Crawford's out. But at the same time, my goodness, Sharks, you needed a game like this. And hopefully this is something that they could build on to have going into the playoffs, if they make the playoffs.
Yeah, no kidding. And you would have thought, Chris, when you put up 7 goals in a game, perhaps one might come on a power play. But alas, not to be.
Well, can't really complain much, though, and we all know this was the feast before the eventual famine that we find ourselves in.
Absolutely. I mean, but it was ridiculous. But, yeah, you know, things are rolling good when Vlasic gets an unassisted tally. That's a sign of a good game on that one. But as Puck Guy did mention, yeah, Sharks, I think, took advantage of just a hobbled Chicago team. Don't have their starter in goal. I mean, poor Crawford. What am I saying poor Crawford for? I don't care. but the Sharks take that one. That was a great bounce back for that. A nice way to answer. And we move on to the Blue Jackets, or what Eric, I believe, calls the Neon Buggers. Kane would end up getting his first goal in Teal in this one. However, Martin Jones ends up getting yanked after 2 periods because the Sharks just could not pull this one together. They gave up 3 unanswered goals. Finally, Jonas Donskoy gets the boys on the board. As I said, Kane would finally get his first. But this one, Chris, what did you take from this Blue Jackets game? Because I expect a little bit more. But then again, coming into this, the Blue Jackets were really they're in a dogfight in their own division.
Definitely. And they jumped on them fast. They got 2 goals early, and then they got that third one. And it's really hard to come back from 3. You can come back from 2, but that was the moment I remember saying, if they don't score that third goal in the game, this is probably not going to happen. And unsurprisingly, it didn't. It was good to see Kane get on the board. And, you know, like I said, the famine that followed the feast.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, and the Sharks did outshoot them 35-28, own the faceoff circles 60-40. But again, and you know, I'm not going to whip it out right now. And when I say whip it out, I mean my power play drum. But you think about it, this would have been one for the Sharks that could have made a pretty solid difference, going 0-4 on the power play on this one. I'm going to go to Eric this time for the panel.
Yeah, it's never fun to go down 3-0. However, this team has shown resiliency this season as opposed to past years. And unfortunately, this is one of those past performances where it's like, oh gosh, 3-0. Do something. Can't get the power play going. Can't get any shots. But Bobrovsky, credit to him, he had a monster of a game that night where they couldn't get anything going. Then Donskoy scores, and then I will say Patrick Kane. Evander Kane gets on the board. His first goal is a Shark. There's your teaser goal, folks. But Bobrovsky played a phenomenal third when you knew the Sharks were going to throw everything at him. Just one of those days where they just couldn't get together.
Yeah, not the game you were hoping for in that one. It was, again, I just go back to the fact that the Blue Jackets are there in a dogfight. And, you know, they did what they had to do. But the Sharks would atone, getting Martin Jones, I believe, his 19th shutout. Is that right? Feels right.
His career, yes.
Yes, 19th career. But picking up 2-0 victory over the Blues. This is a really tight game and maybe one of the best defensive displays that we've seen the Sharks this season, holding the Blues to only 2 shots on goal in the third. I don't know what happened to St. Louis on that one. Bonker, of all people, we should have known, of all people, getting the Sharks off the power play Schneid after going 0-29, had not scored a power play goal since Vegas, been like a calendar month of not scoring on the power play. Bonker puts it up on the power play. Hurdle would get an empty net in this one. I mean, hallelujah for getting off the Schneid. But Chris, what did you take from this St. Louis game? Because, I mean, that was just a really tight game defensively. I mean, 16 shots on goal total for the Blues.
Very good game defensively by the Sharks. Jake Allen kept that from getting really ugly for the Blues. And I'm going to do my best Rocket impression. Hot bod got the Sharks on the board, and hey, you know what, can't complain how those wins come. If you can put a great defensive effort out there and win 1-0, which is basically what the score was, you know, empty netter, but basically you won on one goal, so no complaints there.
Yeah, that's the thing that's kind of interesting so far, is to see what's happened since the Blackhawks win. The Sharks put up 7 versus the Blackhawks and have played 3 games since and have only scored 4 goals. So, man, it comes and it goes, people.
Yeah, hats off to the Sharks. 16 shots on goal. I mean, that's unbelievable. I think they had 5 in the first and then 2 in the third, like you said. All around great defensive play. And that's what you're going to have come playoff time. Things are going to get tight. You're not going to get all the greatest shots in the world. Goaltenders are going to stand on their heads. You know, Jake Allen's taken a lot of crap from Blues fans this season. And now, you know, he stands on his head with a great performance. Martin Jones stands on his head for a great performance. It's going to be, this is a playoff game that we saw tonight or that night. It's nothing you should expect otherwise in the playoffs. You know, unless the randoms of nothing, which would require Rocket to attend the game with me on the glass. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. You can make an argument that it felt like a playoff game in another. I don't know. To me, it almost felt a little bit like a preseason game. Just 60 minutes of like feeling each other out. Okay, what can we get away with? What can we, you know, it was. Who the hell's this guy and why is he wearing skates? I mean, it did have that kind of preseason feel thing going, but we'll move on to the final game. Sharks versus the Washington Capitals on Hockey Day in San Jose. The Sharks would take a 2-0 loss in this one. Sharks just absolutely got owned in the circle, 62-38% in this one. This was, I got to be honest, this is a really boring game to me. The only thing that made this interesting is that Nicklas Backstrom scores what ends up being a very controversial goal if you go and look at the Twitter feed of our friends Randy Hahn and Kevin Kurz. It's a lot of going back and forth where Randy Hahn said, no, that was onside. Hedekin saying it was offside. Kurz initially saying it was offside, then saying maybe it was onside. Eric, what was it? Was it onside or was it offside? Dang it.
After reviewing the play, it has been determined we have no clue. Carry on. Yeah. Unless there's some other angles that we weren't able to see, and unfortunately, I think we only saw two from the broadcast. Unfortunately, to me, it looked like it was offside. And usually, Peter DeBoer has always gone with those challenges. And now remember this year, if you miss on the offsides challenge, there is a 2-minute penalty that attaches to it. So this is probably one of those instances that PDB probably would have done this in years past. But now with that little added element, maybe he didn't. But yeah, you talk about preseason game. This one looked like a preseason game. I mean, mind you that half the roster already wears numbers 50 and above for some freaking reason. But nonetheless, I mean, they didn't look their best. They went 0-for-2 on the power play. It was just meh.
Yeah, I really wasn't feeling this game. I mean, blame it on that whole matinee curse if you want, the 1 o'clock start, if you will. Who knows? But Chris, this Capitals game was just, I don't know, man. I wasn't feeling it.
Was Matt Cain in attendance? Because basically they Matt Cained Martin Jones, third star of the day. I did remember to say day with 96% save percentage. It wasn't his fault that they lost. That offense just could not get it going. And that's why I don't worry as much about was it offside, was it onside. It was one goal and essentially what was a one goal game for the most part. Like they should have been able to get on the board at some point.
And if I remember correctly, this is the first time the Capitals have won in San Jose since like, I don't know.
1993.
Like, I was going to say, yeah. Since they like opened the building that they started playing.
Uncle Darren Steven said that was the 7th home game in San Jose Arena history. So nearly 25 years since the Capitals won in regulation in Teal Town.
And that was amazing to me because I remember we've had a pretty good, games against the Capitals here at home. I didn't realize the score was that skewed over the course of the last 25 years. I thought maybe the last 7-8 years, 25, really?
Well, you know how the Sabres have long owned the Sharks at home and away. It's essentially been the same thing with the Capitals and the Sharks, except for the Sharks are the one on top of that back and forth. Because, I mean, they have a similarly frustrating streak where it's like, how is it that they're at times we were 10-1 against them or something for a good stretch there. Like they probably have that exact same feeling. Like, how does this happen? Why can't they win in San Jose?
It's just, and I'll use another Giants inference. That's amazing ownage. That's all I'm saying. So with that, of course, we now move on to Shark Bites. And we have to talk about it, kids. Jonathan Chichu is retiring or has retired. We're not really sure. I don't think he's playing hockey right now. The retirement ceremony coming on March 24th versus the Calgary Flames. And let's just, talk about it for a second. I mean, any memories for you, Chris, when it comes to the Chichu train, whether you want to talk about the whistle, the fact that, hello, only Richard winner in Sharks history. What say you and your memories of the Cheech train?
I remember it mostly because post lockout, that was the first time I started really getting back into the Sharks when it was the Thornton trade happened. And then just I don't know how it was. Anytime those guys were out on the ice, they were just scoring, scoring, scoring. And it didn't matter. Didn't matter where Chichi was. Somehow magically the puck would find him and it'd be in the back of the net. And I mean, that was, that definitely got me back into the fold after not being so happy about the lockout and kind of blasé on hockey for a little while there. But that got me excited again.
Now, it's funny you bring that up because it's kind of reminiscent, at least a little bit, of when you had the lockout. Again, we're going back to baseball. But you had that lockout in baseball and the home run derby, essentially, between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire kind of fired up interest in the MLB after people were kind of a little muted after the lockout. So I think that's a great point to bring up about that. It did make things interesting. Eric, I don't know about you, but the puck was following him, but it seemed to follow him like ducklings followed the mama when they played the Ducks. You know what I mean?
He had a number of hat tricks that year against Anaheim, and he just was pure odage of the Ducks. But my memory, of course, comes back to before the lockout in 2004. Sharks were in the playoffs. They weren't expected to really do anything after a great run where they shockingly took the Pacific Division title. And it was game two against the Avalanche, where Brad Stewart, you know, just throws it to him, and he pretty much deflects through his legs to make, you know, Rob Blake and David Abisher look silly. And he was just on that roll and has just kept going on that roll in that great 04 run that just were two wins short of going to a cup final.
Oh, so close. For me, when it comes to Cheech, like I don't have like a memory of a specific game or a specific moment per se. Like say with Ricci when he scored the hat trick on, you know, when it was a hat giveaway night on Fan Appreciation. That moment is always going to stick with me when I talk about Ricci. But Cheech, the thing about Cheech, the fact that he always looked like he was a half a second from falling down. Just crazy legs Cheech, man. It was always just, you know, in fact, they should have had like the sound effect here from like the Flintstones whenever you get the moving running feet. Like that's every time I saw Cheech out there on the ice, it always looked like he was about 3 seconds from falling over. And instead, the puck would end up in the back of the net. So congratulations, Jonathan Cheech. We will see you on March 24th at the Tank. That should be pretty fun. On the other half of Shark Bites this week, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus.
But you will.
No, I won't. I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. However, there was, shall we say, if you go back and listen to the Sharks Capitals game, there was a particular player that was called out just a scotch on the broadcast. I don't remember hearing his name too much versus the Blues, but there was a Sharks player that was called out versus the Caps. Well, I came to find out that there was a particular Sharks player who, shall we say, put a little too much sauce on the noodle, if you will. Maybe enjoyed the festivities a bit much. Let me put it this way. I'm not going to name names, but I do believe if you check the roster for what players showed up to the Sampling with the Sharks event on Tuesday, what was that? Was that the 6th, I believe? Yeah, Tuesday the 6th. Sounds right, doesn't it? I don't want to get this wrong, but there was a Sampling with the Sharks event, which is something we could talk about here in a sec, but there was a player who didn't show up, and it's because the night before they just happened to be at a bar having a really, really, really good time. So good on you, and I hope you get it out of your system real quick. Dry out, buddy. And finally for Shark Bites, there was a event that the Sharks held, Sharks Foundation, Sampling with the Sharks. This is an event that I'm sure you're probably familiar with where you pay X amount of dollars and you're able to try some wines and kind of rub elbows with the players and whatnot. Kind of not a black tie event, but certainly a dressier event. Unfortunately, the only event that the Sharks Foundation is doing this season. And I wonder if that had to do with something, how they decided to price this event, because it was marked up significantly from previous seasons, where it was $400 a head to, and that was for the schmoes. And if you wanted VIP, that was $1,000 a head. And I don't know if this is the Sharks trying to, or I keep on saying the Sharks. This is actually the Foundation. This is a separate arm. But I'm wondering, are the Sharks saying, well, we're not going to do the bowling event this year. We're not going to do a golf event this year. We're just going to do this one event. So let's just try to make all the money in one event. You know what I mean? So, and there were even mystery pucks at this event, which is kind of cool. I mean, Chris, would you pay $1,000 or $400 to have wine? Well, see, Chris would be like, okay, if it's craft beer, that's one thing.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, no, you stole you. Like literally plucked the thought right out of my head. But I mean, I was one of the more vocal people on Twitter about this, as I think you were, how disappointed we were about the bowling event going away. Because I mean, yeah, you've done that a couple times. I've done that a couple times. That is a absolute blast. And I'm sure it's a logistical nightmare, which might be part of the reason why they aren't doing it. Or maybe it's back next year. Who knows? But I did see, though, that this year, instead of doing it like the Auto Club or wherever they did it in years past, they actually did it in the arena on the ice surface. Like, I assume they had something over the ice.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to mix alcohol and skates or shoes or whatever. That seemed like a little bit of a big liability, but
that might be fun though.
Yeah, you'd need to full body pads and the whole deal there. But I saw they had the shark head down there. So, you know what, maybe they upgraded the experience a bit. That's entirely possible. But it is a little disappointing. You don't have some more options for, you know, people maybe don't want to spend as much, or maybe people who wine or alcohol isn't their thing. And great also point. You know, I thought that the bowling thing, you know, there's a lot of kids there. You remember, that's a very kid-friendly event. Give kids a lot of chance to rub elbows with their favorite players. And, you know, if you want to grow the game, get the kids.
Right. No. And that was even, if I remember correctly, there's a few of those bowling events where the players actually brought their kids with them to have a good time. So you'd have things like that going on. I mean, Eric, what say you? I know you are not a drinker by any stretch of the imagination, but it's, I mean, I don't know. I mean, call me, I don't know, call me cheap, whatever you want. But I'm just saying, you know, $400 for an event where you're required. There are some people that just, again, Chris made a great point. Some people just booze isn't their thing. You know, they're not into that. And there's other people that doing like the whole dress up thing. They're not comfortable in, you know, khakis and a button up shirt. I'm kind of one of those guys. I'm much more comfortable in, you know, polo and jeans, or of course my patented quarter zip, which you can wear at a bowling alley and maybe not at a sailing with the Sharks event. What's your take on this, Eric?
You know, they're the area that we live in is so diverse, and by diverse I mean by how much the income comes into the homes, and you know, I think they were going for that high end event, and I believe they raised over $400,000.
Just over 450.
Yeah, so I mean, they definitely got a good chunk of that. You know, I think it's just trying to spread out on what they can do and how much they can get out of it. I mean, they also do a live auction there for a number of things. I can't think of offhand what they do sell, but do auction off. But I mean, there are a lot of experiences.
Yeah, I'm sure you know, it could be the penalty box thing. It could be, you know, watching warm ups. It could be watching a game from the alumni suite. Lots of things.
Yeah, and they do a lot, and the Sharks Foundation does a lot of stuff. You know, like part of it, it's the 50-50 raffle, the mystery pucks. They even had warm up pucks from Hockey Fights Cancer Night. They've done a lot of stuff to try to reach out to everybody. So I would hope that, of course, the bowling to return and for me to have that magical run that we had when we all did the event together, but, you know, or just try different things to do it. But yeah, stretch out to everybody. And if this is one that people want to dress up for, go for it.
Yeah. I like the point that Chris made is, this is not a obviously a kid friendly event. So I hope that they do something else along with those lines. And it's also not a, I mean, just call it what it is. It's not a an event where not everybody has $400 to throw away, you know, or, and I don't want to say throw away because you're getting some value for your money there, but that just seems an awful lot of, it's kind of like, well, I could go to like five Sharks games, or I can go to this one event for a couple hours.
Or you go to one Sharks game and sit on the glass.
That too. So it's just, I would hope that they're not, you know, it just felt like a little bit, I want to say kind of wanting to finesse that corporate dollar a little bit. And I don't have a problem with that. Work your corporate things, make that happen, but offer events for the people a little lower on the totem pole, if you will. So excuse me while I jump off my soapbox. We move on to our three stars of the week now that Sharks Bites is closed. And you know what we call our three stars of the week?
Oh, good for you.
And as always, we start with our third star. And we go to Chris. Who is your third star of the week?
My third star of the week, I will give it to Martin Jones, because I felt like he wasn't the problem in any of those losses. He's been pretty solid. Well, okay, he was the problem in one loss. Correction. But overall, been pretty solid. And say even in the Blue Jackets game, there was a lot of other things going on in front of him as well. So he gets my third star. Pretty good week. Okayest week.
Okayest week ever, yes. For me, it's got to, of course, go to Bodker for my third star, because hey,
wow,
got us off the power play Schneid, dude. I'm gonna call it like I see it. Do I think he's going to reach 20 with 14 games left? No. But he got us off the power play Schneid, so you get my third. Eric, yours.
My third star of the week will go to Evander Kane. He has 5 points in five games since being traded to from Buffalo. He's definitely made some impact. He hasn't made like the jumbo impact, if you want to use that as a totem pole stick, whatever you want to call it. But he's done fairly well. I think he solidified that top line a little bit, and he's getting his chances. He's laying at the body. He's doing whatever he needs to be doing.
Absolutely. We go to our second star, and mine, Eric just took mine, Evander Kane. The guys come in and just played very solid, zero problems with him whatsoever, has brought a kind of, I don't want to say nasty, but just a physical streak that I think the team has been missing for quite some time, whether you want to say Ryan Clough. I would even go so far as to compare him a little bit to Owen Nolan. I mean, the guy's just, he's got a nasty streak. He plays a heavy game and he can score, and he doesn't put up with a whole hell of a lot. So, Evander Kane, you get my second. Eric, who's yours?
I'm going to give it to the entire defensive unit. This team, you know, 2 goals against Washington, no goals against St. Louis, 2 goals against Chicago. I mean, in the 3 games that we covered, they allowed only 4 goals. Along with, well, I take that back, and then the 4 goals against Columbus. So 8 goals in the 4 games. Give them credit where credit is due. They've had a number of bad breakdowns, and we've seen some ugly games, especially that Dallas New Year's Eve game. This team is definitely getting defensively solid. The Columbus game, yeah, a little bit of an albatross, but you know, this is what you need. Again, this is getting ready for the playoffs. The defense is, again, doing whatever it needs to be doing.
I always get uncomfortable, Chris, when Eric uses the word unit. Who's your second of the week?
Well, I'm going to piggyback off of what he said a little bit there. My second star would be Brent Burns. I only counted 2 starfishes in those 4 games. His starfish per 60 is definitely going down a little bit, which I could, you know, say is a market improvement, you know. So I guess you call that SF per 60, or yeah.
Nice. And we go to our number one star. And Eric?
I will give this to... We have to. I know you said it for number three, but you have to. The power play buster, Mikhail Boedker. My goodness, dude. You've already surpassed your point total from last year where it was just a nightmare for you. You end the power play struggle, and what was it? It was a simple shot. It wasn't a fancy loop-de-doo behind the pass to the Bernsey and grip it and rip it. It was just a nice pass he got from Donskoy, and he just shot it past him, and they need it. I mean, now they're, what, 1-32, including the Washington game? They need to have him do it some more. So, Mikhail Boedker, for the sake of Hockey Jerk, let's get those more goals.
Oh, dear Lord. Chris, you're number one.
My number one, I have to give it to Evander Kane. I think this is a very boring three stars of the week because yeah. I think we all had some variation on Mikhail Boedker, Evander Kane, yeah, and then someone else. But I would have to, yeah, give it to Evander Kane because he's been impactful since he's been here, a point per game. And the captain looks better next to him. I mean, the captain, I thought he's been better lately, though the last couple games, I don't think anyone's been that great, but.
All right, and my number one star going to Logan Couture because he helps. He gets people on that bandwagon. So when it comes to getting people on the old wagon, Logan Couture is my dude. And that's the three stars of the week, kids. So you know what time it is. Around the horn, baby.
Yeah.
So Seattle looks to be getting themselves a hockey team. If you missed it, and I don't know if it was bar down, but somebody posted a very interesting uniform mock-up. There was an awful lot of green, and I get it, Emerald City and all, but there's no when to say when. You need a complementary color to kind of break it up, just a scooch. But they mocked it up as where the team would be called the Seattle Metropolitans. Okay, sure. You can call them the Metros, the Mets, if you will. Eric, I know you saw the team, the uniform mock-up. What did you think? Where it was the primary crest was kind of the Seattle needle with, you know, a little bit of a skyline thing going on. And I get it. You know, when you see the needle, that's what you attribute. That's immediately what you think of, or you think of like a casino in Vegas.
yeah, that's true. So I'm going to go full hockey jerk on this one and be like, you take out the Seattle skyline and the needle and you put a mountain in there and all of a sudden it's a perfect logo for Disneyland complete with the monorail.
Really? Oh, you know, that's right. I didn't consider that. It shows you, I haven't been to Disneyland in like, I don't know, 20 some odd years. So yeah.
Nonetheless, I actually like the logo. I think it's a great creative, and I believe the guy's name was Justin Cox, who did the design, and he's actually done designs for like goaltender masks as well. And he did absolutely everything. He went down with tickets and advertisement and branding and everything. So kudos to him for going such with an elaborate look to it. I thought it was a little bit too much green. You do need some type of color to change it up. Maybe you add a navy to it to break it up, to go with that little lime green and that sky blue or something with it to just kind of break it up a little bit. But it wasn't a bad design. I'm not sure if that Metropolitans will be the name. I keep hearing Totems, Grizzlies. Totems. So
if they need some orange, we have some down here in San Jose you can have for free. I'm just saying. Totems. I get the backstory on that, but there's some names that just don't go. I'd be fine with Metros. And you said that there's already a soccer team or something already called the Sounders.
Yeah, and they have the lime green and like the light blue already as it is.
Yeah. Obviously can't go with Sonics. That would have been cool. if they knew that they were never getting that NBA team back.
Right.
And then didn't somebody bring up Grizzlies too, even though there was a failed NBA franchise in Vancouver?
Yeah. Did somebody say Vancouver?
I think
the Grizzlies would be another option. It'll be interesting. Another thing I've noticed too is that there's been a lot of red with the NHL Seattle account. So I'm wondering if they're going to be using red a little bit more.
Based on all that, they're just going to look just like Minnesota.
Well, and the original Metropolitans were red and green. So maybe they do something like that.
Okay. I want to say Columbus. Didn't they like start off with like one color scheme and then rode that for about 6-7 years and then completely threw it all out the window and went kind of like red, white, and blue?
They had a lot of colors to it. They had like a light blue, a powder blue, red, neon
yellow.
And they had the neon yellow because their logo was a neon bugger, hence why we call them the neon buggers on here. And then they simplified it. And when they changed the logo to that swooping Ohio flag with the star around it.
Chris, I mean, what do you think? Were you even able to see what this uniform is supposedly? I mean, obviously this is not what it's going to look like. It's a mock-up, but were you able to even see it, or your thoughts on Seattle hockey is what I'm saying.
Yes, absolutely. I saw it, and I totally did not Google it about 30 seconds ago. I don't know. I was always a fan of the idea. I think it was thrown out on our show. I'm sure other people have thrown it out as well. The idea of like the Seattle grunge. To me, that doesn't sound too minor league hockey. I kind of like that for a team name, but probably never going to happen. No. The uniform's a little too much green for my liking. And I don't know if I wanted to see red and green because we already have one Christmas tree style team in the league and they play in Minnesota.
Dude, you hit the nail on the head. It is that like pine green Christmas tree color. It really, and I'm sorry, I'm just not. There are some people like that color of green or the color green in general. I am just not one of those people. It's one of the last colors I pick on the color wheel.
I like myself some Christmas colors, but not 8 months a year.
Yeah.
The thing is, the greens are so close. You need to have some type of contrast with it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Even if you add in a little bit, I mean, you take it. What is, I'm trying to think. I mean, because you look at the A's, the Oakland A's. Mm-hmm. But that's more of kind of, I don't know that I'd call that pine green or forest green. Is more of, I call that like a forest green. And I know that we're, you know, splitting hairs here, but you've already got Minnesota, not to mention the fact that Dallas has a similar shade of green. Now, granted, how many teams do we have in the league that are kind of, I mean, the Rangers and the Blue Jackets, I mean, a lot of them that use red, white, and blue. That is one of the coolest things about the Sharks. They're literally the only team in the league that uses teal. I mean, very cool. But
perhaps I could get a nice light lime green. I don't know. Go to your hardware store, pull out your paint catalog and find something.
Right? I just Seattle Metros. I like that, but I have a feeling that Chris thinks it's going to be like the Seattle crappy craft beers.
No? You said it. No, I didn't even, I wasn't even going to go there. I was thinking like the lattes or the Bucks, you know.
Oh, the Bucks, the Seattle Bucks.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your Seattle Cappuccinos.
Oh, dear Lord. Just call them the Seattle Fraps for short.
you know what that's going to get rhymed with?
Yeah.
That would go over very well with other fan bases.
No, how great would it be like on quote-unquote rivalry night, which we all know is just a, you know, the hyped up hype machine that is ridiculous. But
I can't wait for the big rivalry that will be the Seattle Metros and the Florida Panthers, which is totally not just that they had nothing else to put on that night.
Yep. But no, I mean, could you imagine the Seattle Frappuccinos, the Fraps, when it's Seattle versus Washington, Fraps versus Caps here.
I was going to say, when they play Vegas and they lose, they can go to the casino and play the craps.
Oh, there you go. That as well.
Okay.
I think we need to get out of this. So finally, for around the horn, And we're when we say around the horn, we're bringing this kind of back, and we're going around more, a little more AHL. It was just recently Hockey Day in San Jose, and what that entailed was the aforementioned Capitals Sharks game matinee that happened over the weekend. Well, that was followed by a nice little street rally out on Autumn Street next to the tank. And then we had Barracuda hosting the Cleveland Monsters. And this was blackout night for the Barracuda. Wow, I almost kind of went like baseball guy there for blackout night for the so blackout night for the Cuda. They were giving away at the door a black Barracuda jersey. This is the second time they did this. Last year, they also had a blackout night. The illustrious Puck guy on with us designed last year's black jersey, but there was no giveaway, right? There was no like
they had black t-shirts for everybody.
That's what it was. Okay, but this time, so black jersey. And for those of you who don't think that giveaways get butts into the door, you know, the Barracuda typically get about what 4,000, 4,200 on average, and this one was like 8,500,
as you would say, just a scotch over 8,000.
Wow,
which is a record for them.
And maybe, go ahead, Chris.
And if you go look at Kevin Lacey's Twitter account, you could see before we were even off air with After Dark, there was already a long, long line to get into the game.
Because it was first 4,000, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So people didn't just show up. They showed up early and were ready to get into the building.
That means they wanted that jersey. Holy cannoli. And I would also think that, too, that, you know, it's a Saturday. You got to see the Sharks play beforehand. If I remember correctly, if you had a ticket to the Sharks game, you could go to the box office and show them your ticket, and then they would, like, you could buy a ticket to that Cuda game for, like, $10 or something.
Yeah.
So
that's a great marketing idea. When you're going to have the Sharks in on it, one, keep that same deal going. I mean, shoot, it put butts in the seats. And yes, half the people didn't wear that Barracuda jersey that they got as a giveaway. But shoot, they were still there, and they were treated to a great game, too.
Yeah. Hopefully the Sharks take that going forward. Take the opportunity, take advantage of those times when you can schedule those. Obviously, you want the Sharks to score. You want them to start first. Try to keep the integrity of the ice for the pro game. And, let the AHLers play on the crappy sheet.
Right? Well, and the funny thing is we got a tweet in when we did Barracuda After Dark about how, the Barracuda got a shutout when they were the second team on the ice, and yet the Sharks always complain about them not doing well when they have the 1 o'clock start for the Barracuda game.
Ruh-roh.
Ruh-roh, Reggie.
Yeah, I think we saw that coming. So that was fun, and hopefully maybe we see the Cuda decide to do more jersey giveaways. I would hope that the product on the ice is the primary draw, but if 4,000 jerseys helps bring your butts in the seats, you know, hopefully that will continue in the Barracuda have had some really fun giveaways this season anyway. I mean, there's the Cuda, there was the dual Jones Burns or dual Thornton Burns bobblehead. So they've done, and those have been games when they've had those really cool giveaways. Those have been the ones that you've seen more people than not at those. So keep it up, guys, is what I'm saying. So we move on to what the Sharks have in store. The Sharks, we got Detroit coming up, and then the Sharks take themselves on a 3-game roadie up into Western Canada. So the Red Wings, who are, you know, not your father's Red Wings, this is not the same team, then head up to the Oilers, who we all know have just completely spit the bet on this season. No one saw that coming. The Flames, obviously going to be a huge game with their, as it stands at the time of this cast, only 3 points separating. So, and then, of course, the Canucks, which is Oh, that's just fun. I'm sorry. I love to watch the Canucks suck. That's just, but that's just me. So the Red Wings, Eric, well, how do you see this finishing out? They finish out this homestand versus the spoked wheel, if you will, and then three games in Western Canada. And don't forget, for those of you listening, versus the Flames, make sure to join Curtis Brown for watching the second period on the Twitter machine.
It's actually the Red Wings. It's tomorrow. It's on Monday night for the second period.
Yeah. What did I say?
Flames.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, okay. They both wear red. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
So second period versus the spoked wheel, the Red Wings. Anyway, four games till our next show. How do you think it rolls?
I say they go 3-1. I think they lose to the Oilers because that's so Sharks.
Ooh, see, I say the same. I think they go 3-1. I think they lose to the Flames because that's so Sharks. The one game you need to win. Chris, what do you think?
And again, you stole it out from under me. I was going to say literally the exact same thing. I'll be controversial then and say I think that they lose to the
Canucks, right?
Because not quite. I was going to go with the spoked wheel there, the winged wheel. I don't know. Last time they played them, they struggled. You know what? I say them in Calgary. So 2-2. I'll be the negative one. You're welcome.
Oh, wow. Oh, not even 2-1-1. Okay. So that wraps up the week, or the last 2 weeks that were in Sharks hockey. We will see you guys next week. Chris JBWS, thank you for joining today's cast. Your final thoughts on where the people can find you on the Soch.
On the Soch. Okay, indeed. You can find me everywhere at ChrisJWS on Instagram, Twitter, Beer Advocate, pretty much everywhere.
Untapped.
Untapped, of course. Yeah, of course. And final thoughts are, I mean, it's good that this is entertaining. Like, we have something to talk about. The Sharks, for all their ups and downs this season, they're right in the hunt, and it's going to be a good one. So we got something to talk about. That's the least I can ask for.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. We could be Arizona kids. Eric, your final thoughts on where the people can find you on the Soch.
Well, down the stretch they come, and who knows where this team can finish. I mean, they could be out of the playoffs, in the wild card. Boy, howdy, would that be fun to play against Nashville round one? Or they can have a California rivalry in round one if they finish in the top three. It's going to be a fun 14 games, and glad to be a part of it every step of the way. I'm PuckGuy14. You can find me on the Soch, whether it's Twitter or Instagram, at PuckGuy14. Of course, make sure you tune into Teal Town After Dark after every Sharks game. And it's Sunday, March 11th, 2018 at 9:08 p.m. And Yannick Hansen still hasn't scored a goal this season for the San Jose Sharks.
He's still on the roster. You're disparaging the hockey jerk.
That's for you, hockey jerk.
Yes. My final thoughts, essentially 3 weeks of hockey left. It all comes down to this. So hopefully it's going to be, let's be honest, it's not this road trip versus Western Canada. It's going to be the trip after that, where it's at Chicago and St. Louis and Nashville and Vegas. I mean, that's going to be huge. So it does help, though, that the Sharks do face Calgary two more times before the end of the season. But either way, Sharks just get it together and just try to find that balance, man. I mean, you see that great defensive effort against St. Louis, and then you see just horrible offensive output. So, like, try to dial it in, would you? PDB, get your blender. Oil that thing up, man. Just I don't care how it goes. Just blend the hell out of it. Make it happen. You can find me, AJ_Strong, on Twitter, on Instagram. Also doing at Tealtown USA on the Insta as well. Follow us at Tealtown USA on the Twitter. And if you want to just, like, you know, I like the Pucknologist, but Teal Town, not so much. You can follow just direct at Pucknologist. That's fine too. So subscribe to us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, whichever podcast platform, you know, blows your skirt up. That's the one to listen to us on. And hey, do us a favor, man. Leave a cool comment on there if you would. We'll call you out on a following show. And don't make us call you out the wrong way. I'm just saying. No, I'm kidding. Oh, see, this is what happens when Rocket isn't here to, like, you know, tell us all to behave and keep us in line. This is what happens. So show 44 in the books. We will see you. Oh, 44, Vlasic, baby. Well, that should piss off Gentry. 45 comes up. 45 comes up next week, guys. We will see you then.